back. Jeff Rentz with Michael Roll and Professor Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University, live in the UK, where it's 4 a.m. now. We're looking at some really remarkable photographs from the 19th century. There have been people who have tried to, over the years, Michael Roll, debunk these photos. But given the circumstances and the caliber of people involved with actually making them, it's a little difficult for me to imagine anyone being very successful at it.
The debunking?
Exactly.
Yeah, but these people have had access to the media, and the supporters of Sir William Crookes and all the other scientists have been denied the balance. This is why I've been so angry. And now, at last, we are getting a balance because of the internet. But we haven't been allowed to do what we're doing now in the United Kingdom, to come on and put the balance to what these so-called scientists have been saying. Dr. Richard Wiseman, whenever he comes on television, he always introduces the expert on the subject, and just rips Sir William Crookes apart.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been funded, $150,000 he got from the Perrett Warwick Scholarship that was set up to look into these subjects. And then the other one, Dr. Susan Blackmore, she was given $60,000. And nobody's been allowed to balance them. This is what's made me so angry.
Well, understandable. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, what I was going to say, that Sir William Crookes, when we say he carried out the experiments, actually all he did is observe and report. The actual experiments are done by the scientists in the etheric world. They have the technology to set up this work. They have to take this ectoplasm from the medium to make a sort of temporary sort of spacesuit. And they can then teleport people from their etheric world back to the physical world for recognition purposes. Now, that in 1874 was in its infancy. It's rather like comparing it with a crystal set to the radios that we now have today. And, of course, I've worked with the contemporary medium, Rita Gould, who was far in advance of Florrie Cook. In as much as six recently deceased people were walking around the room as solid as you and me.
Well, you told us about that a couple of years ago at least, and I'll never forget it. It's an amazing experience.
Yeah. When we get a medium now, it'll be totally different, because that ectoplasm that's taken, the heavy ectoplasm, is what actually killed the great medium during the war.
Helen Duncan?
Helen Duncan, yes. You see, Helen Duncan fully materialized in the experiment that I took part in, and I asked her about this, and she says, yes, ever since I was killed in 1956 by that police raid, she said, the scientists over here have been refining the ectoplasm that's taken. In other words, they've been working on the chemistry involved. And she says, now when you feel me, and I was allowed to touch her, she says, you can't feel there's any covering around me, because they have refined the ectoplasm. So we're totally different now. And it's just like touching you. They were solid and as natural as we are all the time they had been teleported back to Earth.
Do the people that come back here take on an appearance of their choosing, or are they represented as they were when they passed?
Absolutely like they were when they passed. They're able to reproduce their old physical bodies. They have the blueprint, obviously, in the etheric world, and that's what they can do. They can teleport them back in a reproduction of the old physical body for recognition purposes.
Okay, all right. The third photograph, Professor Peter Wadhams, this photograph, I'm going to read from it now for those of you who are not able to see it. This photograph was taken by the president of the Royal Society, Sir William Crookes himself, and shows the surgeon, Dr. James M. Gully, recording the pulse of Katie King. The experiments were held under strict test conditions imposed by Crookes himself, who recorded physical differences in complexion, hair coloring, height, heartbeat, blisters, skin type, face, and finger sizes, plus manners and ways of expression between the materialized figure, Katie King, and the medium Florence Cook. All physical comparisons were different, proving they were two separate entities. This is a mind-blowing picture. Here you have the materialized Katie King having her pulse taken by, obviously, a well-known doctor of the time.
Yes, it's a bit serious looking surgeon there. It's an extraordinary picture. As you said, Crookes drew attention to the fact that there was no similarity at all between the materialized Katie King and Florence Cook, including details like Florence Cook had a birthmark on her neck and the Katie King didn't. Crookes took the photograph himself, in one's response to it is either this was a complete fraud perpetrated by Crookes, or it's genuine. It's not like many in Victorian times, there were many spirit photographs taken, and they were often faked done for money and fake. Mm-hmm. And today it's very blatantly obvious that they were faked. The trouble with these photographs is that you'd think this must be a fraud. If this photograph were just produced and somebody said, well, I took this photograph, and you would immediately think, well, this is some kind of fraud and fake. But the fact is, the photograph was taken by one of the most distinguished scientists of the 19th century, and mm-hmm. somebody who did extraordinary work in other fields. So you're left with only the response that Crookes was a fraud. I mean, he had so much to lose by any of that it's impossible to think that he was. And also all the other people who took part in the seances, including this famous doctor in this photograph, would also have to have been frauds.
That's right.
You're left with having to say, well, these things, this was real, and this means that there's something absolutely extraordinary going on, which science should be focusing its attention on, instead of turning away from.
What was Florence Cook doing? You can see her, I believe, on the left there in the background. She would have been in a trance-like state.
She would be in a trance, and if the seance went badly, like if there were any real disturbance when the figure appeared or when it was disappearing again, she would often be physically affected and would really be in a very bad state when she came out of a trance. So there was this production of ectoplasm was something that was very dangerous for the medium, and is something, of course, we don't have any understanding of what it is or how it worked. But interestingly, Michael said that these were observations, and in fact, of course, they were. They weren't experiments. He was observing how this phenomenon happened under conditions which he could control in the mm-hmm. laboratory. But he also did experiments on other mediums who had some sort of intermediate powers between those of Florence Cook and the sort of subjects today that in ESP experiments who have very small but only slightly detectable powers. And one of the most well-known people he worked on was a medium called Daniel Dunglass Hume. And there he did actual experiments with this medium, and at the same time observed materializations, but not of the same caliber.
Right.
You'd have a little hand would appear, and he would see this hand appear and play an accordion. But at the same time, he did careful experiments where he has lots of papers in the Quarterly Journal of Science showing apparatus he constructed to measure very small forces, where he would get the medium just to touch it, or even not to touch it, just to concentrate on it, and he would find that this spring balance on the lever would record some enormous force that was being exerted on a piece of wood that was used as the experimental object, several pounds, and he would record this on a sort of primitive form of a recording system with an indicator moving over a glass plate, very nice, ingenious Victorian mm-hmm. physical apparatus. But he was recording and observing large forces, which he called this psychic force. He thought this is just a new force in physics that this person is able to exert, and let's study it. So he could find a medium who could exert physical forces on objects and also could do materializations, but of a less dramatic kind. So there is a continuum between the very few and very valuable mediums who could produce these full apparitions, others who could not, but could produce very strong physical effects that could easily be detected in the laboratory, and then right down to the much larger number of people who are able to achieve statistically significant effects in ESP tests, but can't do any of these physical things.
Right,
there is a
right.
complete continuum there, and it is one phenomenon, but most people don't have the ability to manifest it in a such a dramatically detectable way.
Understand. Okay, let's pause on that note. Michael Roll, a real quick question within 10 seconds. Were Cook and King actually connected physically with ectoplasm and flesh?
No, they were totally separate.
Okay, they did separate. All right. Very good. Okay, stand by. We'll be right back.
Jeff Rentz program continues.
Okay, right back with you, and Michael Roll, Professor Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University, here along with all of you folks. We're talking about some amazing photographs. And Michael Roll, let's go to photograph number 4 now. This, a lot of people are going to say, ah, no way. This photograph, taken March 29th, 1874. Let me just quote from William Crookes himself. He says, "I pass on to a seance held last night at Hackney, London. Katie never appeared to greater perfection. And for nearly 2 hours, she walked about the room, conversing familiarly with those present. On several occasions, she took my arm when walking, and the impression conveyed to my mind was that it was a living woman by my side instead of a visitor from the other world." So here's a picture of Crookes and Katie King with her arm looped into his left arm, and they're both facing, looks like almost a wedding portrait of sorts.
That's right, and that's exactly the type of thing that I did with the Rita Gould experiment. I
wow.
was allowed to catch hold of the people who materialized.
Were they warm?
Exactly the same as touching us. No different whatsoever. And this, of course, Jeff, opens up the whole thing, because nothing happened yesterday in the laws of physics that doesn't happen today. Our ancestors witnessed what Crookes and I have witnessed in the past. I mean, take the story of Jesus. This proves it's perfectly natural for Jesus to come back like this and prove to his disciples that he had survived death. So even though I'm a secularist, non-religious, I'm giving hope to all these people who follow religion. They are right. It's only the materialists who have started from the base of when you're dead, who are going to be made to look silly when this really gets out among everybody. So I think it's right to give hope to so many people who count on religion. We're giving a proof to the basis of these religions.
That's a good point.
Seen again by their pals after they were killed. And, of course, they thought something supernatural had happened. But now we know nothing is supernatural. If something happens, then there has to be a rational scientific explanation to account for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, we now have that explanation.
Let's go to photograph number 6, Peter. And this one is, again, with the noted surgeon, Dr. James M. Gully. This photograph was taken by Sir William Crookes using electric light. seated to the right of Katie King, who is standing up, apparently, in her typical white outfit, is Dr. Gulley. The quote from Crook's book, "One evening I timed..." Actually, I guess this is a quote from James Gulley, the surgeon. "One evening I timed Katie's pulse. It beat steadily at 75, whilst Miss Cook's pulse, a little time after, was going at its usual rate of 90. She, the materialization medium. On applying my ear to Katie's chest, I heard a heart beating rhythmically inside and pulsating even more steadily than did Miss Cook's heart when she allowed me to try a similar experiment after the seance. Tested in the same way, Katie's lungs were found to be sounder than her medium's. For at the time I tried my experiment, Miss Cook was under medical treatment for a severe cough." I'm assuming, Peter, that was a quote from Dr. Gulley himself.
Well, yes, and this is absolutely extraordinary, because the materialization was complete in every respect. It seemed in every way like a living human being. Many materializations that one sees reported were sort of like a sort of simulacrum of a human, that they would... A sheet of this mysterious ectoplasm would sort of form itself into a human-like shape, but it wouldn't be something that was a full body that was moving about the room and acting and seeming in every way when examined by a doctor, that is, in terms of heartbeat, to be like a living human being. So this really was an absolutely extraordinary spectrum of phenomena, and of course you could see why it's so such a challenge to scientists to accept that this could have happened.
I should say,
because for anybody to accept that this could have happened, and your immediate reaction is, well, this was all a fraud. But given the people that were involved and the number of people involved and their caliber and their what they did in the rest of science, it really wasn't a fraud. These were genuine reports of something that they really observed. And these photographs are very, very important.
This, of course, was certainly in the infancy of photography as a technology. We all remember the Civil War here and the early pictures then. Photography, I guess, Michael Roll, we just have about 30 seconds left, was still being, there were different kinds of light used and so forth back in those days, but it was a dependable medium.
Yes, they were remarkably good photographs considering how it was in its infancy. I'm staggered by them.
All right, let's pause, and when we join you, we'll look at photograph number 7 next, in which Katie King is actually standing next to another eyewitness there and putting a hand on that man's left shoulder. Be right back. With you. Glad you're along. This is really a fascinating subject. I can think of no subject which commands more immediate attention. Michael Roll is with me, Professor Peter Wadhams, Cambridge University. John Sampson will be along the next hour as well. Looking at photographs now, you can see those by clicking on the photo link in the guest box at the top of Rents.com. Look at photograph number 7. This again is a quote. I will read it to you from Sir William Crookes. Before concluding this article, I wish to give some of the points of difference which I have observed between Miss Cook and Katie. Katie's height varies. In my house, I have seen her 6 inches taller than Miss Cook. Last night, with bare feet and not tiptoeing, she was 4.5 inches taller than Miss Cook. Katie's neck was bare last night. The skin was perfectly smooth, both to touch and sight, whilst on Miss Cook's neck is a large blister. Cook, if you joined us late, is the materializing medium, which under similar circumstances is distinctly visible and rough to the touch. Katie's ears are unpierced, whilst Miss Cook habitually wears earrings. Katie's complexion is very fair, while that of Miss Cook is very dark. Katie's fingers are much longer than Miss Cook's, and her face is also larger. In manners and ways of expression, there are also many decided differences, end quote, Sir William Crookes. Peter, this is, again, an extraordinary picture. She is standing there, materialized, putting her hand on someone's shoulder.
Yes, yes, she's resting her arm on a sitter, and the sitter is presumably feeling the pressure of this arm. So in every respect, this materialized entity is behaving and acting as if it were a living being. And so there's the challenge to science. I mean, once you go beyond the challenge of accepting that this was real and not fake, is what is this? In one sense, we know it's not a person. It's materialized out of some sort of material that's come out of the medium and then returns or dissipates after an hour or two, and yet in other respects it's acting as if it were a person and a recognizable person who is the same person each time that you have several sittings, and in each case the same apparent person materializes. So the challenge is to understand what is this? Is it? It's. If you accept that it's real, then is it the true representation of a person who was once alive, or is it something else? Is it? We don't know. Is it something that where the medium is producing a material being? Where all the attributes of that person are perhaps coming from the medium in some way. I mean, it looks as if it's conclusive proof of life after death.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to still, as in the case of mental mediums, there's always this contending hypothesis that somehow, it's coming from the medium by some extraordinary form of telepathy or other psychical effect.
Sure, sure.
But suddenly there's something real here and something absolutely extraordinary, which is a challenge to understand. It's because it's physical rather than mental that we see it as even more of a challenge. If you have a mental medium who gives some information, apparently from a dead person, which nobody else could have known, this is an extraordinary thing and inexplicable. But it's easier to just ignore it. Yet one shouldn't ignore it. One shouldn't ignore reports of experiences with mediums where information is transmitted which nobody else could have known except the dead person.
Sure.
That's a challenge, but somehow or other, because it's simply a message, it can be ignored. But in this case, because it's a living, physical entity, you either have to accept it or reject it with scorn, but you can't ignore it.
Indeed.
So that's what's so extraordinary about these photographs, because they force you to confront the reality of this phenomenon, and then the challenge is to try to understand what it is and what it means.
Michael Roll, this photograph photograph number 9, again of Crooks and King. This picture shows Crooks. When did he die? Approximately.
1919. He died in 1919.
Okay, so we're talking about. This is 1874.
1874,
pictures? Yes. 1874, so 25 and 20 is, that's a long time he had ahead of him to really achieve many of his greatest accomplishments in the field of science. So he carried this for a long time as a great scientist and a great man.
After he published this work, he was knighted, he was made president of the Royal Society, and the king gave him the Order of Merit, the highest decoration there is.
Wow.
So that's the sort of man we're talking about here. And don't forget, when these people materialize, they're not dummies. They talk as easily as I'm talking to you now, Jeff. So we fire in all the questions. What's it like in the next world and everything like that? And it's very exciting. But that then becomes hearsay. The exciting thing is they've proved survival by materializing.
We are all sitting and waiting then for a medium to come forth. And once we have that person in hand, Professor Dr. Schwartz at University of Arizona, into the lab and on tape, on recording tape, on videotape, and preserved, and that's it.
Yes, just confirming the experiments have already been done.
How close we are to it all. All right, stand by. I'll be back. And when we come back, I want to ask Michael to talk a little bit about Daniel Hume. Interesting name popped up there, who was really a superstar of his day in terms of being a man who could, some would say, work miracles. We'll be right back.
The Jeff Rentz program continues.
Okay, and we're back. Tell me about Mr. Hume, Michael Rowe, a little bit. He's a fascinating character. We could actually do a whole program on him at some point. But he was a big celebrity.
What really impressed me about the experiments with Hume is that this accordion that Sir William Crookes put inside a Faraday cage, and the accordion played on its own. Ask Professor Wadhams exactly what a Faraday cage is, and
sure.
Can you step in there, Peter?
Sure. Yes, please do. And a lot of us know, but it's what an amazing thing to do to prove that something unusual was afoot.
Yes, it's a cage that's made of closely spaced electrical wires. And the idea is that it wouldn't allow any electromagnetic radiation to pass through. And in fact, in an experiment, one of these experiments, Crookes not only put the accordion in the cage and allowed Hume just to touch the top of it, and it then played. This was an accordion which wasn't a one that Hume could have fixed. It was one that Crookes bought himself.
You have to pick those up and make the bellows work to get sound out of them. So are you saying that accordion actually opened and closed to produce the bellows velocity necessary to make sound?
It played itself. What happened was Hume was allowed to just hold it at one end, the end that doesn't have any of the keys,
mm-hmm.
and the inside the cage, everything else controlled and the accordion played itself. It moved in and out, and the keys played, and it played a tune. the extraordinary thing is that then this continued when Crookes put an electrical current through the wires of the cage as well. He was trying to see if somehow there's some kind of radiation coming from the medium that was allowing him to do this, but
right.
there wasn't. That was one of his tests. But the extraordinary thing was, of course, that Hume was able to produce a physical effect on this accordion without only touching one end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it sort of sounds like a kind of Uri Geller thing, but Hume, there were lots of other experiments that Crookes did with Hume that were of a similar kind, where Hume was able to produce a powerful physical effect, for instance, affecting the weight of an object, exerting a force on a spring balance, all of which were done by Crookes in the proper traditional Victorian way with some very nicely designed apparatus, and he reported the results the same as if it was an experiment in physics or chemistry, which to him it was. It's just that the results are absolutely extraordinary and unexplained. Hume had so many abilities. There were reports of him being able to levitate, and this is really the same sort of thing. He was exerting a physical effect on himself and reducing his own weight. So these large-scale, what we would now call psychokinesis effects, were things which, in modern laboratories, very tiny forces can be detected, like effects on random number generators. But in those days, or probably in any days, there were very few people with extremely powerful abilities where you could take them into a laboratory and get effects that were easily detectable. And Hume was one of those, and Crookes had the opportunity to work with him. And of course, it would be so wonderful if there were more such people around who could be experimented on. But of course, with the subject attracting such opprobrium, people who have those abilities no longer make them public or exert them. They conceal them, and so we never know that such people exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can I come in there?
Go ahead, Michael.
Yes. This Faraday cage business was proved to me how the etheric people can override our known laws of physics. When I took part in this experiment, one of the etheric people showed me how they could put physical objects through physical objects. It was absolutely staggering. He took a drumstick and tapped it on the table. He said, "Right, you watch, Mike." And then he put the physical drumstick straight through the table. I thought, "My goodness, thank goodness I'm on their side and not fighting against them," because they're mighty powerful people. So that concentrated the mind quite considerably, as you can imagine.
I should say.
And we'll be able to see all this if Professor Swartz can get hold of one of these mediums. He'll be able to cover all this in his experiments.
How many do you think, Peter? How many mediums do you think are out there who might be able to do this kind of thing now? Materialization mediums. How common are they? Is this one in 10 million, one in 100 million? How do you see it?
Well, I think it may be more than that, because the abilities seem to be ones which have to be cultivated and practiced. The mediums who became very famous, like Florence Cook, they started off as mental mediums and then developed this mediumship powers by virtue of actually being practicing mediums. And later, when she after Katie King, various other materialization effects occurred with other she produced other entities. But then, after the furor of these results being published, she retired to Wales and never did any more. And presumably, when she wasn't, these things didn't happen spontaneously. She wouldn't. Presumably, while living in retirement, spontaneously have these kinds of experiences. So they have to be practiced, and it's possible that there are more people than you think who have these powers, but because they never think to actually develop them, we don't know that they exist. It has to be an atmosphere that's conducive to mediumship for people who have seemed to have some extraordinary abilities to both to come forward rather than conceal their powers, mm-hmm. and actually to develop them further by the practice of mediumship. And probably the tragedy today is that because we're a materialistic society, and because there's been so much, this subject has been poo-pooed so much and doesn't form an acceptable part of the scientific world, then people who feel themselves to have some extraordinary ability and power would tend to conceal it and not develop it rather than do something with it. So mm-hmm. the supply of such mediums is it has sort of dried up, but it doesn't mean they're not there. It means that they're not they're not doing anything with their abilities. They're concealing them.
Exactly. Yeah. So when I was with Rita Gould, she must have been born with this sort of chemistry in her makeup that when she'd be washing up at the sink, you'd see a cup rise up and just move about. And when she was driving me in the car, the recorder started playing in the car. So this type of thing happens all around her when she's not in trance, you see.
When did you have your encounters with Rita Gould? What years were those?
This is 1983, this was.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like Florrie Cook, she disappeared off the scene because I expect Florrie Cook got the same hammering that Rita Gould got, you see.
Well, they used to burn people at the stake for things much
not
less than
before.
That.
Not long before, yes,
yeah.
Not long before, yes.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands were burned at the stake, drowned or tortured to death, yeah.
What happened, Peter Wadhams, what happened in, we have just about 3 minutes left, in Crookes' later years, did he continue working in this field or did he get to a point where he had his proof and he had made his statement and that was it?
Well, yes, I mean, to some extent he retired hurt because he published all of this work in 1871 to 1874. He was doing it in the late 1860s when he was already a fellow of the Royal Society. And when he turned to that to investigate spiritualism and investigate these phenomena, he was already a very famous scientist. So people were pleased that a great scientist at last was going to address these phenomena,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But then they were displeased when he declared that they were real. They were hoping he would say,
It had to have been an international shock to a lot of people.
Oh yes, and because it was only Crookes. I mean, he was a very great scientist, but it was just him doing it at that point. He became slightly isolated, and then he continued to mm-hmm. to say this was real, but he didn't do any more of that kind of research. But that was because very soon afterwards the Society for Psychical Research was founded, and with another very enthusiastic group of distinguished scientists who took the work forward from then in 1882 until about the early 20th century. So in a sense, Crookes was validated by the people who came soon after him and carried on the work in greater numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So he
mm-hmm.
didn't have to carry it on in this kind of a thankless, isolated way. But he was the pioneer, but then he passed it on to others to carry on.
Interesting. We're at the end of this hour. I'm going to say good night to you or good morning to you, Peter, and thank you once again for being up in the middle of the night and bringing your amazing expertise and your opinions about all of this to share. Thank you.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Take care. Michael Roll, stand by. We'll be speaking with John Sampson and taking a look at some more of these remarkable photographs from Tom Jones' website as we continue in just a few minutes. We'll be right back.